weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home.
As part of her work for the Shepworth Wildlife Conservation Charity, Rebecca Willers recently spent a fortnight in Sumatra working with the Tiger Protection Conservation Unit. Now safely back at the Shepworth Wildlife Park, Liz Barker went along to meet her.
You've just come back from Sumatra. You've been in the jungle. So tell us, what have you been doing out there?
When the tigers first came in 2001, I had strong ethics and morals, and I wasn't actually that happy about a couple of tigers just being in a cage that were hybrids, so they couldn't be on a breeding program. So I spoke to my father and said I wanted to start looking at doing some conservation work. We started doing the talks every day to the public to raise awareness, raising money, started doing events, and then I started doing my own sponsored events. By maybe 2007-08, we'd raised, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 grand or something for tiger projects. And I started researching which ones I thought it would be good to support, and one was 21st Century Tiger. And then, having raised this money, I kept contacting them saying, you know, I was interested in going out and seeing how this money was being spent, because you always want to know, if you are spending so much time and effort raising money, you want to know it's going to the right cause. It took about 2 years. And then in 2009, I think it was, I was at a conference and just did a bit of networking, and I was talking to a lady and she introduced me to someone else, and they said, oh, this is the girl that raised all this money. And it was actually one of the people that I'd been trying to contact to ask if I could go out and see this project. And she was like, oh, you're the one. Well, we send the details. Anyway, November 2009, I went out to Indonesia, first to Java and then on to Sumatra to go and see the project. And I was out there for 4 or 5 weeks. In that time, it was more about background size. It was a lot more of the office stuff I was seeing behind the scenes. But I got over to Sumatra and met up with the TPCU and went and stayed with them in their base camp. And they took me out into the national park to see the work they were doing and went on and saw some other projects. I said I would be back. I was doing all these sponsored events, the Channel Swim and Kili and stuff. And at the end of Kilimanjaro, I said to the team, look, guys, we need to come up with the next one, because I always get a bit of a downer when I finish something, that I need something else to look forward to. So we spoke about Machu Picchu and some other things, and then I said, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll have a chat with Debbie about this project in March to see if we can do something with them, and that's how it came about. So it took 18 months of planning. We had to get special licenses and permissions and visas to be allowed to go into the national park, because obviously it's not somewhere you're allowed, you'd be trespassing just to wander in there. The team kept changing because people kept dropping out, I think, when they realised that, you know, that it wasn't a supported adventure. So with Kilimanjaro, to give you an idea, there was 10 of us that went. We had, I don't know, 60 or 70 porters. It was ridiculous. So we were only ever carrying maybe 8 kilos on our back. This was completely unsupported. So we would be going with the rangers, for sure. They would be showing us the route that we were taking, but by no means would they be carrying any of our stuff. So we would have to carry our own food and sleeping equipment, etc. So our rucksacks, this is just, I don't know how my, I've got a prolapsed disc in my neck, so I don't know how I survived, were it was 17.7 when I took it on the aeroplane, and then we were given another 3 or 4 kilos of rice and then another bag of some other noodles and stuff as well. So I think we ended up maybe 21, 22 kilos. Well, that was me. I don't know what the other guys were carrying. And that was literally a backbreaker. This amazing woman called Debbie Marta runs the project called the Tiger Protection and Conservation Unit. She is funded by FFI, Fauna and Flora International, based in Cambridge. We met up with her at the airport, went into Sungai Penuh, had to sort out some more licenses and agreements and things, and so spent a night or two there, and then drove literally in jeeps with all our bags to the buffer zone of the national park, jumped out of the jeeps, and then we were for 7 days. And it was just everything you could imagine and then not imagine. The first day was very easy, actually. We trekked only for a few hours and then set up a camp, and we were all still together. So there was 8 people that I took, well, myself and 7 other directors from zoos in the UK. And then we had another 11 with the TPCU rangers with us. And I just can't tell you, it's just, there were so many, not active snares, but signs of where snares had been, and they could point out where snares had been used before. So many poacher camps. Not active, but structures of. They show us the difference between a tiger monitoring camp and a poacher camp. So a poacher camp, they use vine to tie it together, whereas a monitoring camp, they would use actual string.
What's a monitoring camp then?
That would be for the ministry. So it would be people that are actually going into the forest to actually monitor how many tigers are left.
Right.
So not poaching, basically, yeah.
And so how many tigers do they think are left the jungle? Have they got any ideas? Because there's
maybe
dangerous,
like a 100 to 200. Not many in there. Yeah.
So, did you see any signs of tigers when you were out there?
For a couple of days, we were tracking pug marks, which is the tiger paw prints. And what's lovely is, of course, is they're measuring them the whole time. So we knew that we were tracking two different tigers. And what's really unique about this as well is afterwards, I saw with their sticks that they were scrubbing them out. And, well, I guess you kind of think, oh, is that because of the poachers? But, yeah, that's why they do it. So it's basically to stop the poachers being able to track, like we were, the tigers as they go.
How do the poachers track the tigers? Are these snares, like you would imagine, very sort of rusty?
Right, so they're really hard to describe, no. We didn't see a live snare in use. A couple of the people on the other team did. We were seeing snares that had been used. We came across, you're thinking, is the rusty wire around a tree, and it's got the classic rings, they put the foot in it, tightens, and then the tiger kind of tightens as the tiger gets panicky. But then there were also these, they're like holes, and then there's sticks that stick up from them, and then they would have the netting that the poacher would then bring. So what we were coming across is the kind of the skeleton of the snare, and then the poacher would come along and add their bits of wire or their bits of netting or whatever it is that, you know, if it's there a bird poacher or a tiger poacher or whatever. So we were destroying those. So although they weren't active because the actual bit wasn't there, we were destroying the poacher, so the rest of it, so the poacher couldn't come back. I came across a tapir snare area with tapir bones. And we were like, oh, so why would they be trapping the tapir? Is that for the skin or for the meat? It was like, no, it's live bait for the tiger. So then you suddenly realise the magnitude is that it's not just like a tiger that's being affected here. They're using animals that are also precious to us to see then the tapir bone on the floor was just horrible. The worst thing though for us was we came across an old tiger snare again, and there was a tree, like a trunk, in front of the snare, and it had tiger claw marks all down it. And I tell you what, you didn't even need them to talk to you to explain that. You, instantly in our heads, I think it brought tears to all our eyes. You imagined that tiger railing, and 7X, who was our team leader, reached up, and he probably reached up, I don't know, maybe 8 foot, and you could see how far the tiger had gone up. And then what was even more sad is Tolibin then got a photograph out on his camera and showed us the skin, because they did catch those poachers and confiscated the skin back. And then it all became a reality, you know, you could really see it.
Really distressing, I would
imagine. Yeah. So that was the...
So the poachers are using the tigers, it's the skin that gets them the money, is that what it is?
And the bones, yeah, everything.
What are the bones used for? Is it medicine?
The medicinal trade, yeah. So they're just taken straight out of the country. So that's kind of on the snare side, and we were coming across these old snares every couple of hours, if not more frequently. The really shocking things were the two incidents our team had was coming across actually a live poacher camp. So we literally stumbled across it. I mean, whether we thought we stumbled, the TPCU may have already had insight that they were going to be there. We don't know that. And I've got it all on video as we're coming down going, oh, are there people in there? We're not quite sure.
Because that could have been dangerous if you'd actually come across the poachers themselves.
Yeah, well, there was a gun
in
there.
Would they have been
aggressive towards you? Well, I can tell you a story in a minute. So we got down in there. It was a bird poacher camp. And we knew that because there were birds in cages. So there were about 20, they called them the green bird. And the reason why this is so prolific is every Indonesian has a bird in their house. It's a tradition, being illegally poached for the pet trade, if you like. Our TPCU speak amazing English compared to our Bahasa. I mean, I speak a bit of Indonesian, but it's very broken. There was a bit of translation lost here where we were asking them what could we release them, and they were saying no. They were saying they've got broken wings. So we were thinking, well, Jesus, they've actually broken the wings. Anyway, when we got back to base camp a few days later, it transpired actually what they do is they rip out the flight feathers. So it's not that they're broken the wings, they've just ripped out the flight feathers so they can regrow and be released back in the wild. But you obviously couldn't release them there and then because they wouldn't have survived. So we were maybe day 4 or 5, so we were still another 2 or 3 days before we'd be leaving the jungle. So we were saying, can we take them all? And they were saying, well, no, we can't carry them. Being English, we're like, yes, we can. But of course, what we weren't thinking is we still had to go up and down, go through rivers and all sorts. And they were saying, but also if we take them all, this is the more prevalent point, they will just repoach to replace. So actually, you're just putting more birds in a situation when you don't need to. So it was a real catch-22. And I said, well, can we destroy the camp? And they said, well, no, because these people are still 2 or 3 days to get out of the forest. You are potentially killing them, because murdering them, because you're destroying all their food and everything, they won't make it out of the forest. And the bird poachers, like they were saying, aren't the really bad people. The bad people are the tiger poachers. And actually what they were saying, which is really interesting, is the bird poachers will actually disable a tiger snare because of the noise a tiger makes when it's snared, scares the birds away.
So they're kind of doing a good thing.
Yeah, but without even realising it. It is. And also, like they were saying, that a lot of bird poachers are just little village people. They're not really bad people if you met them. What we did was we dismantled the poachers' camp, so they could obviously put it back together, but it caused disruption for them. We took half the birds, and then we wrote all over their camp, "This is National Park." And what 7X was saying is that that is enough. That is enough to really scare them.
But I'm imagining tiger poachers, if you come across them, they would have...
Probably be a different ballgame.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 days after we got back, I saw a thing on Facebook. Quite sad, actually. A ranger had come across... Some rangers had come across some illegal loggers shot dead. So, because the rangers...
The rangers have been shot dead.
Yeah. Because the rangers aren't allowed... Our rangers, anyway, they're only allowed barangs, like machetes for clearing the thicket. They're not allowed guns. But, of course... These poachers and these loggers do have guns. So not always, but, you know, maybe sometimes. So it is dangerous. And 7X was saying, you know, they want to have guns. And then I was thinking, but probably it's best they don't, because then does it become a free-for-all? Yeah.
Do you think enough is being done? Do you think they're taking it seriously, the logging and the destruction of the rainforest and their animals? Is it just something that we care about here? Or do you think they care about it?
Oh, God, no. The TPCU... I mean, I can only talk for the TPCU because I don't know the main structure. What they are doing is absolutely incredible. They are working so hard to protect that place. And if you think in that 7 days, we returned with the snares, with the chainsaw, with the birds. That was just in 7 days. And that was with them having to put up with us. If there would have been a proper crew, they might have, you know, managed to do a bit more distance. Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal what they are achieving. Absolutely phenomenal.
But is the problem, is it too impossible, do you think? Or do you think that...
I think they probably want more rangers, yeah. But they've got no funding.
Yeah.
So the TPCU, Debbie, has to put in applications left, right and centre for the funding. So what I didn't mention actually is part of the thing of us going over there was for sponsorship. So we all got sponsored by friends and family, thank you very much. And we raised about £15,000. It's still coming in, but it's about £15,000 at the moment. So that will hopefully go towards paying for that unit for, you know, we're trying to get some figures from them at the moment, how long that will pay for that unit to be there. But they need the money. I mean, without the money, someone's got to pay these rangers, so, and the base camps have got to be supplied.
But now you've seen it working and you think there is hope. You think, yeah, we can, you know.
Well, those boys are there, they're protecting that area.
But, what an incredible thing to do, though, Rebecca, really. You must feel like, having been there now, you want to raise even more money.
And oh, God,
it's
yeah.
I mean, seeing it firsthand and experiencing it firsthand.
Yeah.
I mean, the tigers, obviously, they end up being poached, but it's obviously less, it's happening less and less, do you think?
No.
No, really?
No. I think awareness for it is increasing. But no, when you're hearing the figures, we were saying, we first started doing our talk in 2001, we were quoting numbers of 10,000 plus. We're now saying we're lucky if there's 3,000 left. So, and that's only in the last 15 years. And when you're getting down to that low, what kind of genetic diversity have you got remaining with some of the subspecies, especially in Sumatra?
Liz Barker speaking to Rebecca Willers at Shepworth Wildlife Park about her recent work in Sumatra with the Tiger Protection Conservation Unit. If you're getting through the half term, by the way, there's lots of things happening at the Shepworth Wildlife Park this week. It's a Halloween half term, and that means pumpkin carving, Mr. Bean's spooky show, and a special Halloween tour and party. If you want to know a little bit more about that, you can find the details at shepworthwildlifepark.co.uk.